Welcome to the Amdocs third quarter 2014 earnings conference call. My name is Bakiba, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that during the question-and-answer session of the call, we ask that you please limit yourself to just one question and one follow-up question. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Matt Smith. Matt Smith, you may begin.
Thank you, Bakiba. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2013, filed on December 9, 2013, and our Form 6-K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 2014 on February 11, 2014, and our Form 6-K furnished for the second quarter of fiscal 2014 on May 15, 2014. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call with me today are Eli Gallman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I'll turn it over to Eli.
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon to anyone joining us on the call today. We are pleased with our third fiscal quarter results, which reflects performance consistent with our overall expectations. Total revenue exceeds $900 million for the first time and included a record revenue in the emerging markets. We secured a number of significant new wins with strategic customers across multiple business lines and geographies. Our free cash flow generation was robust, and we demonstrated disciplined operating execution while bringing innovation to the market through our investment in R&D and in recent acquisitions. Let me now review the company's third fiscal quarter activity on a regional basis. Beginning with North America, where we delivered another solid quarter. Carriers continue to seek new ways to monetize the investment, and this is supporting customer demand for our next-generation solutions across existing buying centers as well as within new growth areas. Along these lines, we are today delighted to announce that we secured new awards with two important North American carriers in the third fiscal quarter. First, Bell Canada has selected Amdocs Convergence Charging, powered by our superior turbocharging technology, as its next-generation charging solution. This arrangement is enabling support for Bell's converging line of businesses and reinforce a long-standing relationship with one of our largest carriers. Second, TELUS, one of Canada's leading suppliers, providers, will upgrade to the latest version of our charging and billing solution, allowing it to bill for IPTV and other new services while resulting in greater efficiency and improved customer experience. We are pleased with the significant growth of the business and momentum that we have seen in North America over the last 12 months. We continue to see many opportunities to support our customers, but we expect that the growth rate we have recently enjoyed are not necessarily sustainable, considering factors such as the timing of new projects award and normal fluctuations in account activity. Additionally, our short-term outlook remains subject to lingering uncertainties resulting from announced consolidation activities among North American wireless and pay TV operators. although we do not see any deterioration in this combined impact of this relative to our assessment of last quarter. Moving to the emerging markets, where we delivered record revenue in the third fiscal quarter. These results reflect the progression of highly complex transformation projects toward production. In light of this performance, let me take a moment to remind you the significant opportunities we see ahead of us in the emerging markets. Major carriers in Latin America and Southeast Asia are continuing to make critical decisions on the directions of their long-term IT system infrastructures as they navigate two important waves of changing industry dynamics. The first one, carriers are focusing investments toward an improved customer experience as their best vehicle to increasingly compete for customer loyalty. This is especially important due to the slower rate of subscriber growth and shift from prepaid to postpaid. Second, rapid economic development in these regions is translating into a rising middle class and higher penetration of smart devices and multiplay offerings. Carriers, therefore, considering to replace their homegrown and legacy systems in favor of scalable modern platforms, which are also enabling them to support the higher level of operating complexity. Importantly, these waves of industry changes reflect the fundamental reasons for our expansion in the emerging markets over the last several years, as we invested in addressing these trends ahead of time. We believe that these trends will continue to support sustainable growth trajectory for Amdocs well into the future. With our track record and unique position in implementing customer experience solutions, we are winning influential deals with the largest carriers in the emerging markets. During the third fiscal quarter, we announced that Telefonica selected Amdocs for a new quad-play transformation project in Chile and Peru. These wins follow on the heels of projects already underway at Telefonica Argentina and demonstrate that our model of expansion through strong execution applies as well as in the emerging market as it does in the developed markets. Looking ahead, we are focused on continuously improving our strategic position in these markets. We project continued growth, although we expect quarterly trends to exhibit lumpiness, primarily owing to the project orientation of our customers' engagements. Turning finally to Europe, revenues were relatively stable on a sequential basis and in line with our expectations. During the quarter, we made further progress with Vodafone Group, where we added another two affiliates to be supported under the global managed services agreement we signed in fiscal 2013. This includes Vodafone's fixed line operation in the UK and Vodafone Group Enterprise machine-to-machine line of operations. We are now supporting 7 Vodafone affiliates under this agreement. With respect to our outlook in Europe, we believe we are positioned to leverage opportunities on multiple fronts. Although we expect difficult macroeconomics and regulatory conditions will continue to present challenges for the carriers in the region. To summarize our regional review, we are pleased with our performance over the past several quarters, including with respect to the number of wins we have secured with several strategic customers across multiple business lines and geographies. In parallel to our geographic expansion, we are also focused on bringing innovative new offerings to the market by way of our R&D investments and acquisition strategies. This includes our recent initiatives in the area of network software, which we presented in detail at the network business investor briefing we held during the third quarter. The post-merger integration of Actix and SalesSight is progressing in line with our original expectation, and we continue to see encouraging levels of customer engagements. We are also seeing demands for Amdocs Convergence, or ACC, a relatively new product which can be offered on a private or public cloud to meet the less complex needs of small service providers. During the third quarter, we successfully brought ACC into production in a southern European multiplay operator. With ACC, we are aiming to address the lower level of complexity of mobile virtual network operators, MVNOs, lower-tier regional service providers, as well as some simple adjacent markets. We see good momentum with this cloud-based product. but naturally, the size of the deals are relatively small. To wrap up, we are on track to deliver full-year revenue growth towards the midpoint of our previously guided range of 5 to 8%. This outlook naturally reflects many moving parts. We remain highly focused on our overall execution. This includes securing new businesses, delivering complex transformation projects into production, integration of our recent acquisition, constantly expanding our product suite, improving our operating efficiencies, and maintaining our commitment towards a balanced allocation of capital over the long term. Finally, we are pleased to advise you that we have scheduled our next Analyst and Investor Day for Tuesday, December 16th, at the Nasdaq MarketSite headquarters in New York City's Midtown, where we look forward to providing you with an update on our strategic objectives as well as the three-year model of the company. With that, I will turn the call over to Tamar.
Thank you, Eli. Third fiscal quarter revenue of $902 million was within our guidance range of $885 to $915 million, with a positive impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately $3 million relative to second fiscal quarter of 2014. Our third fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 16.7%, a decline of 10 basis points compared with the second fiscal quarter of 2014, and within our target range of 16 to 17%. Below the operating line, net interest and other expense was $700K in Q3. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect a net expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was 81 cents in Q3 compared to our guidance range of 75 to 81 cents. Diluted non-GAAP EPS in Q3 was positively impacted by lower than usual net interest and other expense and the non-GAAP effective tax rate, which was at the lower end of our anticipated range. Free cash flow was robust at $173 million in Q3. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $199 million, less $26 million in net capital expenditures and other. As a reminder, over the long term, free cash flow tends to convert at a rate on par with our non-GAAP net income. DSO of 76 days were flat with the prior quarter. Total unbilled receivable rose by $11 million as compared to the second fiscal quarter of 2014. Our total deferred revenue, both short and long term, increased by $38 million sequentially in Q3. Both of these items may fluctuate from quarter to quarter. Our cash balance at the end of the third fiscal quarter was approximately $1.2 billion. Our 12-month backlog, which includes anticipated revenue related to contracts, estimated revenue for managed services contracts, letters of intent, maintenance, and estimated ongoing support activities, was $2.97 billion at the end of third fiscal quarter, up $30 million sequentially. During the third fiscal quarter, we repurchased $93 million of our ordinary shares under our current $500 million authorization plan. We had $74 million remaining under this authorization as of June 30. We also have an additional $750 million authorized pursuant to our April 2014 share buyback program to be executed at the company's discretion going forward. That additional authority does not have a stated expiration. Now, turning to our outlook, we expect revenue to be within a range of $890 to $920 million for the fourth fiscal quarter of 2014. We anticipate minimal sequential impact from foreign currency fluctuations as compared to Q3. Translating our fourth quarter to the full fiscal year, total revenue growth continues to track towards the midpoint of our previously stated guidance range of 5 to 8% on a constant currency and reported basis. Also within the full year outlook and consistent with our prior expectations, we still anticipate revenue from our directory business in fiscal 2014 to decrease in the double-digit percentage range, placing about a 1% drag on the total company results. We anticipate our non-GAAP operating margin for fiscal 2014 to continue to be within our long-term target range of 16 to 17%. We also expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be in the range of 13 to 15% for the full fiscal year. We expect the fourth fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in a range of 75 to 81 cents. Our fourth fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS guidance also incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 161 million shares and the likelihood of a negative impact from foreign exchange fluctuations in net interest and other expense. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the fourth fiscal quarter, as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. Factoring in our fourth fiscal quarter outlook, we believe we are on track to deliver on our guidance for diluted non-GAAP EPS growth of 6 to 9% for the full fiscal year 2014. With that, we can turn it back to the operator to begin our question and answer session.
Great, thank you. We will now begin a question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. And if you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. And please note that we ask that you limit yourself to just one question and one follow-up question. Please stand by. And our first question is going to come from Shaul Eyal out of Oppenheimer. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you, operator. Hi, good afternoon, guys.
Hi,
Eli, Tamar.
Hi.
Two quick questions on my end. On the operating margin, I know it is within the range, but is it just a mix issue or just still the, staying the course in that respect?
I'll say there's nothing much to attribute to the plus minus 10 basis points. We said it always that we manage the company within the range. We're tracking on the higher half of the range for some time now. And we don't see anything to attribute to this minus 10 basis points. It's just part of different moving parts that are happening in every given quarter.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Elion, on the Bell Canada, on the turbo, the convergent charging, turbo charging, can you provide us with cite more color about the nature of this product? Is it part of the overall offering you guys have already going on with Bell Canada? Thank you.
So, Shaul, the turbocharging and the new charging engines is part of the CES product line. It's a major component of the revenue management. It includes the ability to rate anything and everything in real time. That is to say that we, this charging engine do not really distinguish between prepaid and postpaid voice or data or video or content elements or what have you. You can combine any of the offerings in any permutation based on any price play you can think of, and it's all done in real time. So this is the winning revenue management engine of the world. It's the same engine that AT&T is using, the same engine that Sprint is now converting to, and now Bell and Telus. If we'll win Cricket, that probably will be the engine for them, because this is the engine for AO, the prepaid in AO. And also it's the same product that is used in Brazil and Indonesia and in Peru and any other place you can, in Europe, anywhere other place you can think of. So this is by far one of the most advanced products that we ever created. And it's built for high volume and high complexity. So high volume, high complexity in real time, fault tolerant, this is quite an impressive component. And obviously when someone like Bell is choosing to do it, that's a very important project. Now, we are not upgrading any other component necessarily at the same time, but this is also always a gradual process we see in other customers.
Thank you. And then our next question is going to come from Jason Kupferberg out of Jefferies. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Amit Singh for Jason. So just quickly on backlog, it grew solidly at 4.9% year over year this quarter. So if you could just help us dissect that backlog based on geographies, in which regions showed faster growth versus others?
We are not necessarily dissecting it by geographies, but I will say we've seen a strong win rate across geographies. We gave a couple of examples from recent quarter wins in the prepared remarks regarding both North America in Latin America. We are also continuing to see good momentum in APAC and Europe. So it's actually a broad-based momentum that we're seeing. The nature of activity may range from one region to another. So in Europe, we're seeing a good momentum recently in managed services, for example. In emerging markets, naturally, it will be more towards transformational projects. So the type of activity may differ, but overall, it's a broad-based activity.
I would say that the variance and the richness of the components of this backlog, rising level of backlog, is the one thing that gives me a comfort level. Because it's all different product lines, revenue management, run optimization, OSS, customer management, and many others, all geographies, and some of them are delivery projects, some of them managed services projects, and so on and so forth. So this is exactly the type of variance I would like to see in the backlog, and that's what we see. So the fact that it's not coming from one place and one region, one item, is exactly the strength of it.
Great. So there's good growth in backlog and all the other contracts and different regions that you speak of. So if you think about your organic revenue beyond, let's say now fiscal 14, should we expect some sort of acceleration, so to speak, from here for revenue growth?
So this is an excellent question, and that's exactly why we are scheduling an analyst day in December to provide a longer term view of the company and more detailed FY15. I would not try to be carried away with acceleration. You see, the industry, we are doing much better than the competitors, and we're doing better than many other players in the industry, but you know, the industry as a general term is not accelerating. The overall weighted average of IT growth in telecom worldwide is about 2%. So you know, we can grow double, maybe more than double of the rate, but we cannot generate business out of thin air. So, but if you want the details, and we'll be more than happy to provide the details, you'll have to be patient until the analyst call on day on December 16th.
Sure, fair enough. And then just one question last from my side. With this AT&T acquisition of DTV, I mean, assuming both of these companies are your clients, so is there any near-term and long-term impact on spending? I mean, have you seen any? Is there supposed to be any hiccup? I mean, are you expecting any sort of hiccup from AT&T or any other long-term benefit from this merger?
So thank you for your question. Let me check it a little bit broader. We said last quarter and the quarter before that we expect overall North America to converge into fewer, very large multiplay carriers, and that's exactly what we're seeing in the last few quarters. the latest and greatest is AT&T and DirecTV, but these are not the only one. There are a lot of other moving parts that are still in play out there. In general, we still hold the opinion that this very large, complex multiplay carriers have major challenges in consolidation and upgrade and creating a system that can support the future. And there are very, very, very few companies that can help them. Actually, as I said many times, we know only one. Now, the short term may present some challenges because competitors may try to sneak in and offer something very, very attractive, and because there is a change in dynamics, or some people will go into the design phase and for a few quarters they will say, okay, don't do anything, hold on until we finish the design. We've seen it before. We still think long term. Most of these things are turning usually into our benefits. We don't see, specifically to your question now, we don't see this type of spasm on either one of the sides. On the contrary, I think each one of them contemplate on activities that will be relevant if they would go through the merger or if they will stay independent. And there are activities like this, and we are in dialogue on both sides. We are the one company that is allowed to talk with both sides. They cannot talk to each other in greater details, but we can. And we are trying very much to help prepare for an option that they will have an approval for this transaction.
Thank you. And then our next question is going to come from Tom Roderick out of Stifel. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks, and good afternoon. I wanted to follow up on the topic of network optimization, given that you guys had a nice session on that this quarter, and it seems like both sell-side and Actix are tracking at least in line with expectations. When you're talking to carrier customers out there, how much of this is a pull relative to what they're asking you for as they go through architectural evolution? And then as it relates to, you know, the interaction with the hardware stack and other players out there, kind of curious how you're able to position that relative to other network equipment providers.
So, Tom, thank you for the question. First of all, I would say that we see interest and we see activities and dialogue and also POs, purchase orders, from all around the world, and sometimes these are carriers that we don't have a lot of business with, so it's an interesting angle into new carriers. Sometimes we are initiating this activity. Sometimes they're actually calling us, but we see a major interest every time we go to talk to people, and as a matter of fact, we almost need to put some priority in the activity that we have right now, because we don't want to spend, you know, to spread the engineers and the salespeople too thin. This specific quarter, we saw wins in different geographies from North America all the way to APAC. In terms of our ability to work with different hardware stack, that's actually part of the strength of the offering, that we are indifferent to the NEPs, to the network equipment providers, and also to the hybrid. Very few, actually I don't think that there is any other one that can do a good job on hybrid scenarios. So A, we are doing a better job on each one of the hardware stacks, and that's why we can win against, you know, Ericsson optimizing their own network, or Huawei optimizing their own network, or Alu, or whatever. Then we have the ability to do it cross NEPs. We have the ability to do it cross technologies, 3G, 4G, and alike. And last but not least, we are the only one out there that is in really not conflicting, because you can imagine that the NEPs optimizing their own network have an issue. If they find a way to save a lot of hardware, it's nice on the software side, but they are being penalized, quote unquote, by selling much less hardware. We are the only one out there that is indifferent to the NEPs, and carriers actually understand it. Now, the fact that now we can offer it as a product or as a service or as a or as any combination thereof is a very powerful ingredient by itself. So altogether, it's a very strong offering. It's a very accountable proposition. The accountability is that we take responsibility of what we do. The nice thing about it also that you can start small and grow over time. You can take one city on one technology, let's say 3G in wherever, and then expand on geographies and expand on technology and expand on NEPs and so on and so forth. So altogether, we are happy with this thing, and our customers are happy as well, which is even more important.
Great. Ellie, maybe one quick follow-up on the topic of network optimization. I think you guys had talked about that group contributing somewhere in the ballpark of $100 million for this year. Can you confirm that you know, on track means, or in line means, on track to hit or achieve or hit or exceed those targets? And how should we ought to think about the capability of that group to grow as you look out the next couple of years here?
So we didn't really guide specific numbers, but it is significant revenue. It's probably north of $100 million together. Meeting or being happy with the results is quite simple. We are meeting or exceeding our business plan, and in both revenue, EBIT, and everything else. And in wins, we have to, you know, people have to come up with new purchase orders and new growth. We see it as a growth engine. In other words, we see this engine growing faster than the average growth of the company. I think it's a little bit too early to say, you know, twice as fast or whatever from the average growth of the company, but we see it as a growth engine for the company. So that's kind of giving you a little bit of color around that. But I have to tell you that already I cannot distinguish something that starts there and ends up with something else, because we combined it. This is actually showing a strategic move. It's combined with the rest of the offering. Some of it is with our OSS, some of it with our managed services deals. Maybe today, but definitely very soon it will be hard to separate between the components. But I tried to give you some color on this segment of the business.
Thank you. And then our next question is going to come from Mark Sue from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Perhaps at a high level, do you feel your discussions with carriers, particularly the wireless operators that are undergoing the network transformations, the discussion is less about OpEx savings and is it changing to more about service velocity? Are you finding that you're taking a broader suite of your products as well? Maybe if you could give a sense of which customers are forward-thinking and taking, looking at it more strategically, and where do you still have opportunities?
So, Mark, it's a very good question. If I'll try to do it shortly, as we are on the clock here, look, what you see around the world, first of all, is the trend that we see in North America. We're talking about larger, more complex galaxy mega carriers around the world. There are fewer of them, but they are very, very complex and very, very big. Just to name a few of them, Vodafone is one of those. Telefonica is one of those, both in Europe and Latin America. Singapore Telecom, all across Southeast Asia, the Philippines, Indonesia, Australia, Thailand, you name it. And the same thing goes with America Mobile, which has several operators, operating companies in Latin America and in Europe now. So when you talk, and obviously these are our really target, because this provides the, you know, disproportionate amount of revenue and EBIT of telecom in the world. So the potential is accordingly. We are going after this sophisticated carriers. First, because the money is there, and secondly, because the complexity is there, and we thrive on very complex offerings. So all of those that I just mentioned are having a strategic view of the world. They invest in the future. They invest in multiplay. They invest in multi-countries and so on and so forth. Obviously, each one of them at a certain point also want to operate or run the railroad better. Okay, so the more complex and the more sophisticated the company is, the more you talk about strategic moves, investing in the future, and so on and so forth. Obviously, I did not mention AT&T. I did not mention many other companies that are at the same group. Now, on the other hand, you may see an operator in a specific country in Europe, or someone the growth has gone, that will put more effort on just efficiencies. The beauty of Amdocs is that we build our product set and our offering in general that we can apply different tools to different cases. So if it's all about efficiencies, we'll apply more of the managed services approach. We'll apply more of the order to activation, end-to-end service. We will apply more radio optimization to optimize the network. So these would be the elements. If you go to to the extreme, we will apply multi-channel customer management that allow very high level of customer sophistication, customer interaction with on many touch points across the carrier offering. We'll apply multiplay, that is to say, wireless, broadband, pay TV, wearables, machine to machines, connected cars, stuff like this. So this all multiplay. Again, the beauty of what we did throughout the years and definitely in recent years, we've built our offerings in such a way that we can apply different tools in different scenarios and different timings. Sometimes it starts with one and move to the other. And that's actually the long answer to your the short long answer to your question.
That's actually helpful. And if I take your comments and I relay it to your business, the business has been defined internally by linear scale headcount by headcount. And as networks continue to evolve, are there considerations to look at increasing efficiency and optimization and kind of getting that multiplier effect within your business over the longer term?
So, look, the fact that that we are developing software today in a very different way and we apply the same version of software in many cases, let's say 5 years ago it would be if we were sell 10 copies of the same version of revenue management, we'll be very happy. Now probably we have several dozens, probably north of 50 implementation of 8191 range of revenue management. So efficiencies are done by develop once, implement many. That's one direction. The second one is the fact that we are operating our activities in large centers. We basically do most of the delivery of the project and definitely most of the managed services of the in large operation, large operating facilities, if you can call it this way. So that's another way of getting away from the linearity of everything. Now, if you're talking about the network we are trying to through software to replace a lot of people. That's part of the whole trick on network software is to replace a lot of people, a lot of technicians, the RF radios of the engineers and so on and so forth. So I can actually address your question from very many different angles, but I would try to give you a feeling for the direction. Most likely we'll have to continue that offline. So thank you.
Thank you. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. And if you're using a speakerphone, please remember that you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. So once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. And our next question is going to come from Tal Liani out of Bank of America, Merrill Lynch.
Hi, just a few small questions. The first one is the growth for this year includes, as far as I remember, some acquisitions. What is the organic growth for this year if you strip out the acquisitions? And then without giving specific guidance, as you look into the next years, do you think that this organic growth should change up or down and why? And second, so that's a question on kind of the growth environment. Just about the quarter, I have some questions on financial expense was lower than expected, taxes were lower than expected, and share count was lower than expected. If you can comment on these three items. Thanks.
Thanks, Tal. So when we guided for the year, we talked about the acquisitions contributing about 2-3% of the revenue growth, and we are tracking slightly ahead of that. We are continuing to see good performance on the acquired asset as well as on the rest of the business, of course. Then taking that and fast forwarding to fiscal 15, I think it's a bit too early. We'll come back with that guidance in November, and of course at the analyst day in December, talk about the 3-year horizon of our dynamics of growth. Going then to your second question about the different line items in the P&L, hedging activity and the cost of hedging is highly dependent on different changes in many currencies in which we operate. So while we have seen in prior quarters a higher impact of the currency fluctuations and the hedging cost, this quarter was actually lower. As we've said in the prepared remarks, we don't think this is a new level. We actually expect or should take projecting for next quarter, again, a few million dollars of finance expense, primarily due to currency impact. Looking on the tax rate, it tends to fluctuate from quarter to quarter. We've seen it last year. We continue to see it this year. However, we continue to believe that the annual range of 13-15% effective tax rate is the one to expect for our business. And then on the share count, usually one quarter ahead we guide without buyback activity within that specific quarter. So that may have a slight impact on the share count, but it didn't move that much actually. So if you exclude all these items and just look on the operating activity, we were tracking slightly ahead on the top line. Actually, we've met the midpoint of the EPS range we've talked about, and then we had a couple of upside points coming from items below the operating line, which brought us to the higher end of the EPS range guided to the 81 cents.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. And then our next question is going to come from Sterling Auty out of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, guys.
Hi.
I know sometimes it's tough to read in the license service mix, but given the percentage completion, is there any tie here that we can look at between, you know, the $11 million in license revenue, maybe some projects completing and coming out of the bottom of the funnel versus the $30 million increase in backlog? You had some notable signings during the quarter. I was almost wondering why the backlog may not have, you know, been up a little bit more.
So thank you for the question. I think the relevance of the license revenue line is actually becoming less and less as we move more into models of managed services. Most of our deals these days are bundled. We don't sell license standalone, as you know. We typically sell bigger and bigger transformational deals in which the license is just one small part of the overall value. We sell additional development and maintenance services, and we continue and push, and you see that, to transfer more of our customers' activity into the managed services model. So the license is becoming almost an irrelevant data point. And we are actually thinking about this disclosure item for the years to come. Is that actually bringing any value, if at all? Having said all of that, I would say the only relevance of license is actually in the future elements of maintenance and subsequent license fee that are coming later on. But other than that, we don't see any connection between a license and indicating any future activity or license and operating margin. Now moving to the backlog, as we said always, backlog is defined very strictly by us. Whenever it goes to maintenance or recurring activity, then we don't necessarily wait for the signed contract. But whenever it's a new activity, a new project, only when it's fully binding and signed, that's when we include it into the backlog. We are also talking about next 12 months backlog. So some of the deals we're signing obviously have a much longer horizon than what we report within the 12 months backlog. So there are different factors that the impact of, you know, what goes into the next 12 months backlog and what's not, And while we see it as a long-term indicator for the progression of the business and the visibility, I wouldn't take it as much as now plotting that as an accurate indicator of what is going to be the next 12 months growth on the revenue side. It's also a good indication for the sustainability of the business, as we've seen in the downturn of 2008-09, while top-line revenue for 1 year in 2009 was down 6% on constant currency basis, the backlog hardly moved. So it's also an indication of the sustainability of our business.
Okay, and then the one follow-up, Dave, for Ali, on the competitive landscape, you know, we've seen some notable names like Telecom Italia, et cetera, maybe doing some things on the converged and managed service area with Converse and others. How would you characterize the competitive environment in the developed markets? You know, obviously we've seen what you're doing in the emerging markets, but the developed markets, both Europe and elsewhere.
I would say, you know, as I said, in the emerging market, it's quite clear that we have a very, very nice win rate. But it's actually quite true to the developed market as well. There are a lot of deals that were signed many, many years ago with some of our competitors. You know, when you want to deviate from, if you don't have a really reason to transform, people usually tend to stay as long as they can. I would argue that some of the platforms that that people are using from our competitors are really not sustainable in the future because they cannot invest in their new products and new offerings. But I'm not surprised at all that some companies, especially in areas that do not have any major changes and they don't have any reason to go through a transformation, will just try to put some of the legacy system on a life support mode and extend the contract. But we're now bidding in several areas in developed market, but within APAC or developed market within Europe, and some other carriers do believe in their future and they want to transform from this type of competitors. And then I think that we will see the same dynamics that we see in other places, that we have a very significant win rate. After saying all that, we don't have 100% of the win rate of the market. I mean, it's nobody expects us to, but we still enjoy a significant win rate whenever it comes to new platform, transformation, half transformation, or whatever you. And the life support mode is something that you would expect to see, especially in areas that they have very low dynamics.
Great, thank you. And then our last question is going to come from Andrew Flea out of Robert W. Baird. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Thanks for taking my question. Thinking about software-defined networking and network optimization, after the AT&T Domain 2.0 announcement, did you see interest kind of come broadly from carriers across all geographies, or are carriers in developed markets, you know, more interested in making that kind of a transformation at this time?
So it's a very good question. I think that in general, I don't know if it's statistically accurate because I didn't check every carrier around the world, but Domain 2.0 is considered to be right now the most advanced attempt to virtualize major network functions. Everybody is watching it, and especially in the developed markets, everybody in North America is watching it, everybody in Europe is watching it, and definitely the emerging markets are slightly behind, but once it will be cracked, let's put it this way, or become practical, I'm sure there will be a lot of followers. And it's a natural thing, you know, it's a major attempt to virtualize network functions. AT&T, which is an early adopter in many, many topics, is also an early adopter In this case, it is led by personally by no less than the CTO of the company, John Donovan, a very complex undertaking. You have to be smart and brave at the same time to do things like this, but the reward, our potential reward, are enormous, and that's why I put their, I think they put the energy and the effort to that. We are definitely glad to be chosen to be part of this project. It's a leading edge, cutting edge, whatever you like to call it. And I would say that we see already, and that's only, you know, it measures in very few months or very few quarters, we see already interest in some other, with some other major carriers. It's only, I think only right now it's safe to say only with major carriers, but we see already a dialogue that we develop with the second wave. And I think that once it is successful, I think you will see the third and the fourth wave as well. So bottom line, AT&T Domain Entrepreneur is the leader. We see some activities already with few others in Europe and in other places in North America. And we believe it actually is going to happen. It's just a matter of whether it will be within a year or 2 years or 3 years, but it's going to happen. And we have a nice progress so far in terms of the development and the engineering side of it, but it's too early to share it with you guys.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you. And we have no additional questions at this time. So at this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to Matt Smith for closing remarks.
Thank you, Bakiba, and thank you very much for joining our call this evening and for your continued interest in Amdocs. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming days, and if you do have any additional questions, please call the Investor Relations Group. Have a great evening, and with that, we'll conclude the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.